This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take calls to the bottom of the hour. Then we're going to get you together with Bradley McDougal, the safety for the Seahawks. We'll also get you together with Justin Britt to get you a preview of this Jacksonville game and the challenges being faced by the offensive line. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour, but we're taking your phone calls all this half hour. Let's get going with Pat in Gig Harbor. Hey, Pat.
Hey, John. A question. How many people are on the selection committee that decides who is in the playoff?
Oh, boy. And you're talking in college, right?
College?
Am I wrong in saying it's eight? I think it's eight, but I could be wrong on that.
Okay. And do they have some requirements as far as any conflict of interest with any colleges that are, like, if somebody has clearly got a conflict of interest, are they eliminated because they went to a school
Pretty much, no.
How do they keep it neutral?
I think they it's hard to do that, because, again, you're going to have, everybody comes from some school, and
right.
So it's like, I don't think there's any way you can do that.
Okay, so my question is this. Obviously, I have no dog in this fight, but like with the Alabama-Ohio State conflict, I know, like, Kirk Herbstreit, it's pretty predictable that he would be upset when they didn't get picked.
Correct, yes.
But did you have a chance to look at Joel Klatt's his rant about the selection?
I did not. And by the way, it's 13 on the selection committee. But what did Joel say?
Oh, I mean, his case was airtight. I don't know how anybody could have heard that and not have thought that there was more at play in that than just they picked the best team.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember all the details. I don't know what his background is either. But, I mean, I heard a lot of them, and I kind of thought that maybe the strength of schedule, the season, how it stacked up, and then the winning your conference championship. I thought those things all carried a lot more weight than apparently they do.
They don't, no.
Well, they don't.
To me, what it shows is now how flawed the system is, because if you're using strength of schedule, right, is it performance on the field or is it a statistical thing, okay? And again, all the statistical things don't match up. I mean, for example, the SEC plays 8 conference games, right, where the Pac-12 plays 9. And so now you have, what's going to be a tougher go in the Pac-12 than there is going to be in the SEC. Second, it's so set up that they basically ignore the conference championship games. I mean, last year, 2 teams from the Big Ten made it, and they were, one was in the championship game and one wasn't. Ohio State wasn't in it. You see Alabama not in a championship game. To me, that just says, okay, you've now proven you have to take this to 8. Because if you're going to make judgmental things as opposed to just having the championships, then you have wild cards, just like you have in the NFL, just like you have in the other sports. That's why if you take it to 8, if you have the 5 major conferences, you take care of those championships. They should be in there every year to make it meaningful. And then second, you have 3 wild cards. And so if it's Central Florida, if it's a surprise team, if it's Alabama, fine. But you should not be not going to your championship game and getting in. To me, that's ludicrous.
I agree. And in fact, I think that if you haven't heard Joel Klatt's, he's pretty articulate in a lot of ways. I don't think he has any bias in this, but of all the arguments that I heard, and I just watched it, on MSN, I just watched his little video, and it was the most airtight argument I have heard from anybody about why Ohio State should have got in. I'd recommend you listen to it.
Okay, no, I'd agree. And I just think it's a flawed system. And, of course, they always come back with the idea, it's like, well, but it gets you to talk about it more. Hey, if you gear up, if you're a school and you have your greatest season ever and you're robbed by something like this, then it's all wrong. And it's a real simple thing to do. Just have 8 games or 8 teams, because now you have wild cards and you can put those judgmental things in there and you get them on the field and they fight it out. But in the meantime, that's what they're not doing yet. At some point, they'll
get
there.
And I'll be honest, I don't think that Alabama has any more glamour than Ohio State on the big picture. Ohio State travels well. They're a huge program. They've got a lot of history. I think they kind of got jobbed this time around, but that's the way it goes.
I know. It's not fair, but that's the way it is. Good call, Pat.
All right.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to David in Buckley. Hey, David.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
I really want to talk to you about the Seahawks roster. You got three basically aging Pro Bowlers on the IR. How much cap space is that?
Oh, just off the top of my head, you're probably talking about 20 million, something off the
20 million. Yeah. Because the reason I'm talking is, do you think maybe we saw a little bit of the changing of the guard on Monday or Sunday
a
night?
Bit. Yeah. Well, what you're seeing is the potential of the changing of the guard, because you got to see how it's going to be. Because, I mean, clearly, they're, over the next couple of years, they've got to make tough decisions. And you can't just keep – because, you know, pretty much like every starter now is like a $10 million entity, and it's going to be more. So now, are you better served to – you know, because now, you know, there's economics involved in Cam Chancellor, because he's got injury guarantees of roughly $12 million. But then, of course, you can balance that off by, you know, asking him back if he can't play for the 7.5, but if he does retire, but again, he's entitled to $12 million. You know, Richard Sherman's making the last on a $14 million contract. I mean, Cliff Averill, you know, you still don't know if he's coming back, so you save a little bit of money there, but you're also losing good players. But, you know, they're gonna have to make tough decisions.
Well, what I'm saying is, I played linebacker, and then I had a neck injury just like these guys did. And I really can't see Cliff Averill coming back. And the little with Chancellor, it says, yeah, I love Cam Chancellor, but it just seems like his body is just breaking down now. Even though he's coming into training camp, he says it's the best he's ever felt, but it seems like he's missing more and more games every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that, you know, what I was more thinking was, you can take that cap space and you can reach. And I truly believe that Bobby Wagner's having an MVP season. But I think a lot of that has to do with Sheldon Richardson up front, who just basically destroys offensive lines that just can't get to Bobby Wagner.
That's correct.
He's allowed to run free all over the place. If you watch the games, you see Richardson just throwing offensive linemen all over the place, and Wagner's just flying through the hole making plays when no one's able to touch him. And then I think they also need to kind of they can't let this kid McDougal in the back end go. This kid,
no.
He might not hit like Chancellor, but he's got massive cover skills that Chancellor doesn't even have.
No, I agree. I mean, they've got to find a way to keep him because, I mean, you know, he's one of the bridges to the future. But then also what you have to make a decision on, where are you on Tedrick Thompson and where are you in Delano Hill, you know, two guys that you drafted that could be of value as far as the long-term replacements. But, no, I think that McDougal has earned any chance because, I mean, the drop-off it's different. It's a drop-off, but it's not as bad as you would think.
Yeah, it's a different because what you're giving up in the enforcer down in the line, I think you're gaining in coverage, especially on tight end.
Right.
You know, I think it's the way that was always the Achilles heel of the Seattle defense was the tight ends were just killing them.
Mm-hmm,
and now you've got this kid. I watched him Sunday night just blanket Ertz all over the place.
Oh, yeah. No, he's really good. And
but then
he's very versatile, too.
But I also looking at the running back situation. Do you think they wouldn't be bringing Eddie Lacy back, would they?
No way.
And it was kind of like everyone was talking at the start of the year how this was such a deep, and now we're finding out that, you know, C.J. Procyte, as great as skills as he has, he can't last more than
can't
one play
long.
In a game.
No, I mean, you know, availability is one of the keys, and he's just simply not available.
And now Thomas Rawls, you know, they thought he was something, but I mean, obviously he's not in plans. He's basically become a healthy scratch almost every game.
Pretty much.
So do you look for a back in the draft?
I think you look in the draft, yeah. Because, again, it's like you don't want to – because, again, you know, you have to make a decision on Jimmy Graham. You know, you have other – you at some point you got to take care of Frank Clark. You'd love to be able to take care of Sheldon Richardson.
But I'd really hate to see Graham go because it's taken them this long to figure out how to use him. Now they figured out how to use him and you just let him go.
Yeah, I know. That's – A very unfortunate thing. So, like I say, the decisions are not going to be easy for John Snyder and for Pete Carroll.
Well, I was just wondering about how much cap space with those three guys. Because, you know, like I'm in healthcare and I oversee trauma.
Right.
And Richard Sherman's injury, you know, he keeps saying, yeah, he's coming back with a vengeance. But you're talking about an ruptured Achilles tendon. And this is a contract year.
Mm-hmm.
And this is almost a year recovery. Yeah, he might be able to come back and play the first time of the year, but he's not going to be the same.
Yeah.
He's not going to be the same.
But the one thing is, I mean, speed is not the essence as a Seahawk cornerback. I mean, he's not that fast anyways. It's the footwork.
As long as he has the good footwork, then he's okay. Yeah, it's the cutting on that tendon, though. I mean, you're going to see a cornerback who has that problem with attendance, so he's going to round his cuts and stuff, and he's just like what happened with Revis. You know, mm-hmm. you're talking about a guy who started having hip problems, and he had to round his cuts. He was getting burnt because of just of health issues.
Right.
But are you going to want to spend the $14-15 million?
And they may not. But you also want to have that leadership. Again, these decisions are not going to be easy. First, you got to see how you finish the season. I mean, for example, I mean, you still don't discount the chance of this being a great season, because you can see a lot of good things are set up. You win the Jacksonville game. Now you do have the possibility of getting to 11 or 12 wins, and then as many home games as you can get in the playoffs enhances your chances of getting to the Super Bowl. You need a few breaks along the way, but you need to stay healthy. But, after you sort that all out, then you start making decisions once you figure out where you are and when's your season end.
Well, the other question I want to ask you, I haven't heard anything on what's going on with George Fant? How's his recovery?
Fine, but here's the reality of that. You now have come up with a better left tackle. I mean, Dwayne Brown's been sensational. And
well,
think about what he's doing with a bad ankle. Yeah, and so it's like where Fant, you don't know if he's going to be now a backup left tackle, if he's going to be a right tackle. I mean, I saw him in the locker room the other day. He seemed to be in good spirits and things coming along well, so you would anticipate he's being back. You know he's a great athlete, but, that left tackle position is taken care of. They've got Dwayne Brown.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm just wondering if he's just on a one-year deal.
No, he's got another year left.
Oh, he does have.
Yeah, he's got 2 years left in the contract.
Okay, great. Well, I was just checking on the cap space and seeing if we can get these young kids sewed up, because I'd hate to see these young kids who are playing so well and they're young.
Right.
And
no question.
To give them up.
No, I think they want to say, hey, thank you for the phone call.
Yep, thanks.
Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And don't forget, coming up at the bottom of the hour, catch up with Justin Britt. We'll also catch up with Bradley McDougald as they get ready for the game coming up. Big one against the Jacksonville Jaguars, a game that I think everybody's kind of looking forward to see. They moved the game back to accommodate the huge element of this game. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Hey, Matt, what do we have on the line right now? Let's go to Mike in Friday Harbor. Hey, Mike.
Hey, John. I got a couple ideas we're talking about Thursday night football.
Yeah.
And obviously, it doesn't seem like it's going to get done without a bye. So why couldn't they, or maybe you can answer this, get rid of one of the preseason games that nobody likes anyway?
They'd love to. But then the problem is they don't want to start the regular season before Labor Day. I mean, but, if you give up the revenue from that, I mean, then what you have to do is expand the playoffs. And I don't necessarily see any of that happening until they start going into the next CBA. But to me, that would make sense. And believe me, it's like Roger Goodell would like to take the preseason down from 4 to 2 games. That would be something that he would like, because he thinks the quality is terrible. But then the problem is, unless the league readjusts its thinking on having the timing of the games, because again, it's like I don't have a problem, because really with this day and age right now, it's like it's not like you take the family out for Labor Day and you're driving back from somewhere. Sure, that happens a bunch, but if you're still doing it, I mean, you can still watch the games because all the games are on TV, or you can see them on your iPhone or whatever it is. I mean, if you get rid of that notion, then that opens the door to do those things. As far as the preseason thing, if you eliminate two preseason games, what they have to do then is find the recompensation, and that would come in extra things, whether it's extra playoff games or whatever.
I want to add another week to the season, but yeah, I see that. All about money.
It's real simple for the players to say we hate Thursday football, but now would they like to have seven less cap dollars per team? I mean, would you want to give up $211 million in cap, or $214 million in cap room, along with the fact that which will shrink your free agent's ability when salaries are going up? I mean, you really start to wipe out the middle class, and you lose $132,000 as far as what you would have available for on your average salary.
Right. Yeah, Again, it's all about money. And they're making a lot of money on Thursday night, I'm sure.
Yeah, they make over $500,000. They don't make the $1 billion that they make on, you know, the Monday night. They make $2 billion or $1.9 billion, and it's $1 million on the Sunday games, $1 million on the NBC games. But right now, and they're still trying to get it so they would make $1 billion on Thursday night football.
They're probably not making that much on preseason games, but I bet the next CBA will address that issue.
Yeah, I know. I would agree with that. And, you know, they've got to figure it out. The players don't like it. But, again, I don't think the players want to give up too much money. I mean, that's where I think you get them into some bargaining session to see. It's like, okay, how do you feel about this? And, you know, if they want to give up the money, yeah. But I don't think the league and, you know, the players don't want to give up the money. So it's nice to say. It's nice to think about. I think the best scheming is to try to do that. But in the end, you know, are you going to take less dollars? And usually that's not the case.
No, right. Similar issue in the NCAA playoff picture. There's three games at the beginning of the season that are these non-conference meaningless games.
Right.
They could easily buy time there. Plus, now they sit for 3 weeks doing nothing. So I can't see why they couldn't go to an 8-team playoff. I'm sure that's in the plans in the future, but that would eliminate all these arguments we have with the top four.
Well, and it's not like they can say, well, geez, it's too much of an imposition on the players to do that. It's like, hey, don't they do this in all the other divisions? I mean, you know, there's a 16-team playoff in the one.
And how much money would be generated by another week of, you're only talking, if it went to 8 teams, you're just talking one more weekend, and
they
make a ton of money with those matchups.
Oh, I agree.
Yep.
And it's all about the money.
It's all about money, so that'll probably come in the future, too. We just have to wait.
It's inevitable. It's just when they do it.
Right, right. Okay, John, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Taking your phone calls here as we get ready for Jacksonville, heading out for that flight that's going to be coming up, which should be a long one. This one's going to be a pretty long one, heading over to Jacksonville. I hate to even think of how late I get in, and then, of course, coming back, going to stick in Jacksonville on Monday so I can do the show. So, but, of course, there's so much to talk about this game, about this team, and where this whole season is going. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And, of course, I think the big thing tomorrow is just containing containing a quarterback like Blake Bortles, who is a containable quarterback. I mean, sure, you can't overestimate him. You can't make the mental mistakes. You can't make the penalties. But what you have to do is make sure that you hold him back so that he doesn't be able to get more than 17 points. If you can hold him to 14 points, which I think is reasonable, particularly knowing that their running game is suspect because, you know, they do have an okay offensive line, but not a great offensive line. But they also have a running back in Leonard Fournette that's, you know, playing injured. He's playing with an ankle injury, and he's only averaged about 2.9 a carry over the last several weeks. So he's more containable. So that's the one challenge they face. I would have to think what has to be a consideration is trying to get Chris Ivory more involved because he's a physical running back. But the one thing I think you can see from Seattle, they are very good against the run, and they keep getting better and better. So much of that is the play of Sheldon Richardson along with Jaron Reed. I mean, those two guys have been great as far as run stopping, and that opens things up for Bobby Wagner to come in and fly in there and make tackles. That combination is just great right now. And, I mean, really, since the Tennessee game, I think overall for the whole game, they're only allowing 3.3 yards per carry. And on first down this whole season, they're allowing 2.9 yards per carry on first down. That's about as good as you want. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The big challenge, of course, is also trying to make sure that the offensive line does a good job against Jacksonville's defensive line, and that won't be easy. You know, they know Calais Campbell. The one thing that's kind of interesting is the fact that on the left side of the line, you know, they have two players in Dwayne Brown and Luke Jokel, the former Jacksonville Jaguar, that at least know the particulars. They've been in the division. I mean, Luke Jokel knows everything about Jacksonville. They practice against those guys all the time, at least until he got hurt last year. You know, Dwayne Lane Brown has played against Jacksonville's defense two times. And, of course, they all know Calais Campbell because of the division games he's had here in the NFC West. So those are at least on the advantage right now of Seattle with the offensive line. But blocking him is going to be the real challenge because they are so good at getting to the quarterback and so aggressive, and they got so much speed now at linebacker that and they're so good in the secondary. So that is going to be, you know, what's going to be very tough for this team to try to handle. But hey, that's what the challenge is. And if you're going to be a playoff team, you need to win games like this. It's not, again, being on the road, it's not easy, but this still is a winnable game. Thoughts? Let's go to James in Lake City. Hey, James.
Yeah, hi. I just wondering, how come they can't have like just one bye? For everybody.
Because they want to have it as a 17-week season. It starts pretty much right after Labor Day. They want everybody back from the holidays to get ready for the season. They feel it's best for attendance as far as the games and interest as far as everything goes. I mean, I guess they feel there'll be a perceived rate decline if you put it before Labor Day, and so they don't want to make it an 18-week season. I mean, and again, it's a matter that you're trying to squeeze a lot of things in now. I mean, now they're up to 4 to 5 international games. When you go to London, you almost need that bye week to try to recover from the game. Even though Baltimore and maybe Indianapolis or whatever didn't take that bye week, you still like to have the option for the bye week. And also, remember, I mean, you can't stretch the thing out where unless you get concessions from NBC and CBS Fox and CBS on the Sunday games, because then if you start scratching some of these Sunday games by weeks, particularly in the first 4 weeks and the last 5 weeks of the season, they have less inventory and less chance for good games.
Yeah. Okay. One more question. Do you think that Seahawks missed on Alex Collins?
Not what we saw in training camp, but the way it looks right now, the answer is yes. Because in training camp, he was the sixth best running back. Simple as that. Mike Davis looked better. C.J. Procise looked better. Thomas Rawls had his background. Eddie Lacy, you had to wait and see how that was going to go. J.D. McKissick showed some stuff. So he was sixth, but now you look, he was the most effective of the backs because he's out there getting yards for Baltimore and showing he's a good starter. At this moment, the Seahawks are still trying to figure out if Mike Davis is going to be an adequate enough starter. But, the running of Alex Collins right now, it's like, based on what you saw in training camp and what you saw even last season, it wasn't a mistake. Now you're looking back and you say, well, how do you, and again, that shows you the talent that they had at the running back position. He was sixth.
Yeah, but I still believe that. I just knew he was going to be big. I just knew he was going to be big, and I just had a feeling that I was so mad. I thought they should have got rid of Eddie Lacy.
Yeah, but remember, he had a guaranteed contract, and you didn't know if he was going to fail because, again, he was so late in coming back from that ankle injuries, yeah. Plural, that he had to kind of wait it out. Now, in retrospect, you see, okay, it didn't work out, but regardless, he was going to have a guaranteed contract to make $4.2
million. Yeah.
So the question is, do you want to pay $4.2 million for nothing and let him go or whatever? And you didn't see enough from Alex Collins to make that decision at that time. Hey, thank you for the phone call. Hey, coming up, we're going to go and talk to Bradley McDougal and then also talk to Justin Britt. They're coming up here in the next half hour. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Welcome back. Well, the Seahawks head to Jacksonville. Actually, they're already there. I'm heading there this afternoon. But the big challenge is going to be on the offensive line, because what you face right now is the middle of a three-game gauntlet against some very good defensive tackles, very good defensive linemen. And joining us right now is Justin Britt. So now you face this gauntlet of three games going against some of the best interior defenses and defensive lines in football. So, Justin, what has been the biggest challenge from what you see from the Eagles, then coming up Jacksonville and the Rams?
Just being right. Not making too much of it, and just trusting the process and believing in each other. I think we're one of the best teams, sticking with our fundamentals throughout the season and not getting away from those. So just staying true to us and continuing having great practices, and I think getting Luke back has been huge, and then Ethan continues to do a pretty good job filling in wherever we need him.
What was the biggest success you felt as stopping the Eagles defensive line?
Like I said, being on the same page, communication, having great hands, great feet, great pad level. They were a real explosive defensive line. I'm sure down the road we'll see them again in the playoffs. But, yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, it was a bar fight. We knew it would be, so mentally we were prepared.
What's it going to be like against Jacksonville? Because, I mean, boy, you look at how good they started the season. Then they add Marcell Dareus. It's like, it's almost like too much. That's a lot on the defensive line.
Yeah, pretty much every game to end the season is going to be a bar fight going forward. You know, this week we have a really good defense overall and really good defensive front, and the next week and the week after that. So, you know, it's just taking care of our bodies mentally, you know, taking a break on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, getting back into it. And by Sunday, you're ready to have another bar fight. So, you know, we embrace it. We accept the challenge. We've had a really good year growing and coming together as an offense and as a offensive line. So it's just another great test for us to go out there and show what we can do.
Are you surprised how well Dwayne Brown has helped this offensive line? Because his addition is almost maybe equal to maybe like Andrew Whitworth down with the Rams.
Well, I think Dwayne's one of the best left tackles in the league. You know, he, from the looks of it, he continues to get better and better by age. So having him on the line kind of eases a lot of people's minds and their, you know, stress, if you will, from, you know, us on the line to the quarterback to the coaches. You know, everyone's able to just relax and have trust. Not that they didn't trust, you know, Reese. You just get a veteran in there. That presence, just the experience he's had and the football he's played, it's just unmatchable unless you've done it.
Is it just what he can do physically, or is it also what he can do as far as helping other guys?
Kind of all the above. You know, like I said, his presence, you know, I feel like Luke feels at ease and trust him, even though they haven't worked a lot together. You know, both of them have played enough ball to learn to trust the guy next to you. Whenever you get someone who's played 10 years in, you know, they've seen a lot, they've done a lot, they've kind of experienced everything. So, you know, you have that. Leadership-wise, he's come in and done a really good job, and the line has been open to his voice, and, you know, I'm very open to it, and, you know, to have someone like him, I'm very fortunate and grateful for it.
It seems like each week the pass blocking keeps getting better and better and better.
Yeah, and that's just having the same line in there, working together. Whenever you start having to move people around due to injuries and you have a new left tackle or a new left guard, whatever you want, and you have to learn how they play and how they pass block and where they're going to be, you know, it can create some issues. But whenever, you know, I get to work with Luke and Ethan over and over and over, and they get to work with their tackles over and over and over, trust starts to kick in, and you understand how, you know, the guy next to you plays, and, you know, the gaps aren't there.
It's going to be interesting for Luke going back to Jacksonville, the team that drafted him, didn't bring him back. I mean, a chance to really show some things to the Jaguars.
Yeah. We want to go to Jacksonville. I want to get Luke a win there. You know, I want to win every game going forward, and, you know, it'll be fun.
How good does this team feel now? Because that game against the Eagles really, I thought, got confidence up.
Yeah, I feel like the Eagles game kind of showed us who we are, and we can still be better. There's a lot of areas we can still improve, but I think we took a huge step forward, and it's definitely something to build off of.
What's the best thing you feel about your season and the way it's going?
Mentally, I'm way ahead of where I was last year, you know, trying to learn center. And, you know, this year I'm more free and more in control of what's going on out there and able to, you know, help people like Ethan, who's going through his first year, kind of like Max did with me.
Mm-hmm. It's nice having some older guys in the room, too, because, well, you were the older guy last year, having to be of the sage advice, but now having some older guys, that has to be a big plus.
Yeah, it was huge picking up guys like Luke O'Day and, you know, Dwayne later on, but... like I said, you know, you can't replace the experience value and what that brings to the table. And, you know, like guys like number 91 for Jacksonville, like Dwayne's played him before, and we've never played Jacksonville since I've been here. So, you know, he's got experience with pretty much everybody in the league. So, Just that aspect really helps.
Of course, you do get Calais Campbell on some of those inside pass rushes. That's a challenge.
Yeah, we've seen Calais quite a few times, and yeah, he's still going strong and doing what he does really well.
Hey, Justin, thanks.
Thank you.
Justin Britt talking about the improvements on the offensive line, the challenge of trying to take on some pretty good defensive lines coming up, and right now I think you can see he's having a Pro Bowl caliber season. He'll find out this week if he's going to be in the Pro Bowl. Well, coming up, one of the big acquisitions for this year was Bradley McDougal, because Bradley McDougal was able to go out, fill in for Earl Thomas for one game, for Cam Chancellor the rest of the season. He comes next. It's the John Clayton Show on the 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Tell you what, I know when I saw Pete Carroll at the owners' meeting this year, how happy he was getting Bradley McDougal, because what he was able to get is an upgrade over last year in case anything went wrong at the safety position. As you can see, McDougal's been able to fill in very adequately at free safety. He's doing a great job at strong safety, and he's different than what you see from Cam Chancellor or Earl Thomas, but he's very good. So joining us right now is Bradley McDougal. Hey, talk about this past month and how you have evolved and grown with the different positions at safety you've been able to play, and now how comfortable you feel.
I think it just goes all back to the preparation. You know, it started back in OTAs, coaches giving me opportunity to learn both positions in a situation where either guy go down, and just getting me comfortable to go in and fill at either position.
And of course, I mean, how much time did you devote? I mean, did you go equally, or is there one over the other? How do you kind of go into the preparation for that?
Well, going into it, I think my biggest concern was just to learn the defense as a whole, not one position, but learn the defense as a whole, learn where my health is at, learn where guys are, how guys move around on the defense. And if you learn the whole concept, you can just focus. Then you can go back and just focus on your position and the things you need to focus on.
Which position is harder, strong or free?
I would say free safety, for the simple fact that you're the blanket of defense, you're the last line of defense. There's no time that you can really be wrong, because if you're wrong, that's when they usually score. Three technique could be wrong, the linebacker could be wrong, the strong safety could be wrong, but you need that free safety back there to be right.
Now, how differently is your use as a strong safety compared to what you had when you were in Tampa Bay?
I would say there's a little difference from this game in Tampa Bay, for the simple fact when I was in Tampa, it was a two high look more so often. Or even if we were an 8-man box, we held a two high look. Here, we let it be known, we'll walk a strong safety down the box, and guys just line up and play football.
Yeah, but the great part is, I mean, you go down there, you stop the run, but also, too, you get even more involved in the pass coverage closer to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and that's the thing I like about the strong safety position. Not only are you responsible for run fits, but you also get the cover guys and get down there and drop zones and man-to-man on tight ends and get down there nitty-gritty.
It seems like the one thing I seem to notice when you come up the line of scrimmage and move back, you really flow well. I mean, you really move well. What is the key in making that happen?
That's just relying on your technique. You know, that goes back to film study, just slowing down the game. You know, once you slow down the game, your body is going to move accordingly. It allows you to see things and move. When you're moving fast, or you're moving too fast, you can be out of whack, stumble. It's just all about being poised and just under control out there.
Okay. The defense itself, how much do you like it, and how much does it fit what you like to do?
I love it. I'm still learning. I'm still growing in it. But I love it. It's a lot of plays out there, especially for the strong safety, free safety. It's a defensive back friendly defense. It's very aggressive, and we get after guys, and I just like playing with the guys around me.
One thing that was real noticeable, at least on the sidelines in the Eagles game, is how well the communication was among the defensive backs and the linebacker. It seems like that has been very strong.
That goes again to our preparation, and that starts in walkthrough. You know, Wednesdays, early in the week, as soon as we get plays, we try to find the troubling plays first, the plays that we think could give us the most problems, and we break it down. We ask each other, how you see it, how do you see it? And then once we come to consensus and we figure out a way to get it stopped, we go out there and put it to action on the field.
Over the last month, what has been the biggest challenge for you and the secondary?
I would just say getting on the same page with everybody, and I think we've done a great job of that. You know, guys have been hurt. We brought Shaq back and had Jack Rain up. I mean, just getting the consistency with the guys around you and just getting on the same page. I wouldn't say it was troubling at all, but just getting on the same page, getting those reps, getting that timing down with the guys, getting familiar with the guys you're going to be working with.
How amazed are you to see how quickly Byron Maxwell was able to come back, fit right back in? I mean, he was out there after three practices, and it looked like he hadn't missed anything since being here a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, I was definitely impressed.
But I mean, that's a true vet for you. I mean, his name's up there on the Super Bowl.
So you say you talked to him,
Raz, and he's up there for a reason, you know. And he comes back, and he just it's just a testament to his work study, his film, and him as a true professional.
What are the challenges that you get from the Jacksonville Jaguars and their offense?
They're a high-flying offense. They love to run the ball. They got a couple great receivers that can go up and get the ball. A quarterback that's big. He can run the ball when he needs to. It's just all around a good offense.
Yeah. And, of course, I mean, it looks like the running style of Leonard Fournette is tough, but he's been fighting an ankle injury, which makes him a little bit, maybe easier to stop. But he's a tough back, really one of the better ones in the league.
Yeah, I mean, he is. Everything you just said was correct about it. I respect his game. I like how he plays the game. But he lines up on Sunday. We all have to just, if he's out there, we're going to play him as if he's regular. I mean, you have to go in there thinking that he's going to go out there and give his all, and we have to do the things we need to stop him.
So now that you're starting, what happens to the Mac package with the three safeties?
I mean, it's still in their back pocket. I mean, we haven't canceled it. We still have the package there. It's opportunities for the younger safeties to get in there with the same safety look and get some work in there in the game. So hopefully we get a chance to run it.
Yeah. I mean, who gets to fill in now on the Mac package? I mean, who gets to be the new Mac? Or do you get to be the Mac and somebody gets...
I don't know. You ask cousins on that.
And then finally, just as far as what have you seen so far, just looking at Blake Bortles, the type of quarterback he is, and what do you need to do to try to stop him?
Well, he definitely has a powerful arm. He can make all the throws, and that's the first thing I noticed about him. Besides his accuracy on the deep balls and the throws he can make, I would say he's elusive. We got to be able to cover extended for extended time for the simple fact that he can make the first defender miss as they try to sack him. So we have to stay in coverage. Also, we have to be able to be alert for the QB scramble when he tries to get extra yards.
And then finally, how much fun are you having?
I'm having a ball. It's a blessing to be here and be able opportunity to just contribute to help these guys win and do my part. And just be around such a great group of guys.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's Bradley McDougal, and of course you can see he's a big part of what this defense is right now. And sure, it's not the same without two members of the Legion of Boom out there, but it's not that bad. It's still pretty good. Hey, as KJ Wright says, don't sleep on the Seahawks. Hey, thank you, everybody. It's been a great show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show and producing the show. I'll be back on Monday at 10, next week back at 9 o'clock on Saturday with a full show from 9 until 12, the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.